If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to the High Hawks and Temperature Rising off their most recent release, Mother Nature Show, available now on Lo-Hi Records, wherever you stream or buy music. For the uninitiated, the High Hawks are a bluegrass Americana music supergroup featuring members of Leftover Salmon, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, Hardworking Americans, Railroad Earth, and Great American Taxi. Mother Nature Show is actually the band's sophomore effort and demonstrates a lot of growth in this band's combined effort. I caught up with Vince Herman, Leftover Salmon's frontman and one of the High Hawks vocalists and guitar players, and Chad Staley, the High Hawks keyboard player and vocalist, to get a status check on the band's evolution, the songwriting process, and how Mother Nature's Show came together. Thanks so much for taking the time, guys. Really appreciate it. They say that it takes a lifetime to make your first album, but the real critical one is the second album. And I know that you aren't strangers to this gig, and I know that you guys have been in other bands and in other bands together. What's different about the High Hawks sophomore release from the original? Chad, I'll start with you.
I think we figured each other out a little bit more. And I think, you know, as lifers, as everyone is in this band, it seems, you know, each and every member in this group is always trying to hone their craft further. And I'd say, you know, from the songwriting perspective, I felt like all the songwriters upped their game on another level. Even, you know, some of us 30, 40 years into doing this, it just seems to get better. And I felt like all the songwriters brought amazing songs, and then the band getting to know each other a little bit better. We served the songs even better than we did the first go around. And with the first record, I think it was more of like, we kind of went at it from a live context. We had built the songs for the live show. And then when we went into the studio, we had a very small window of time. And so we kind of just went at it from more of a live aspect, where this second time around, we were able to dig in for 8-9 days at Pachyderm Studios in the middle of a blizzard. There was nothing to do but just to make music, record, and focus in. And I think we really had a less is more approach, you know, to it. It was like everybody just tried to find a little piece of something to just like help the song live and breathe. And it was really cool how it came together, and kind of seeing that in the reviews we're reading too. It seems listeners are hearing that too.
As our journey with the High Hawks continues, I think Chad's right. You know, the songwriting is improving, and the playing, and just learning how to breathe together as a band. One of the really cool things on this record are the improv kind of guitar rants, you know, that build up in a really organic matter in the studio. That's hard to do, you know, to capture that lightning in the bottle. And I think we did that a couple times on this record, probably as a result of knowing each other and being able to riff off each other a little more than on the first record.
So I guess good songs really have two important components. Well, all songs have two important components: lyrics and the music themselves, the melody and the playing that goes behind those lyrics. When one of the songwriters writes one of these songs, do they already have sort of the instrumentation and the melody already together, or is that something that you guys work on as a group when you're you know, at Pachyderm in the studio alone?
I think we have basic sketches of the songs going into it, but then these contrapuntal melodies show up, you know, as we work on the arrangements and the process. You know, I think of Chad's Mellotron lines on a couple songs that just added this unexpected thing that, you know, that none of us really saw coming until we were in the process of creating and figuring out how to enhance the tunes, and finding surprises like that is a mark of a good collaboration, you know, with everybody free to contribute and contribute in a sensible way, I guess, to the song.
totally agree with everything Vince just said there. And one thing I really appreciate about the context of the High Hawks and what we've built here is that I think everybody feels safe to offer ideas. It's a, you know, it's a safe haven, which maybe we don't always have. And so when that happens, I think it allows for a lot of creativity to prosper. You know, there are no bad ideas. And we chase those ideas down. And two, it seems the songwriters coming in aren't being overly precious about, you know, we basically as producing the album ourselves, we kind of allowed each songwriter to kind of produce their own songs or at least be the leader, but no one's overly precious about anything and allows these ideas to flourish. And, you know, if you're working with talented people who care about the songs, it just allows things to really flourish and come to the forefront and make the song better.
As we trust each other more, you know, more of that comes into play too.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Is it easy in a super group, for lack of a better word, when
super
there are
friends group, Ira?
Super,
friends
super group. That's good. I like
super
that.
Super friends.
I like that. Is it easier in a group like this where there are four songwriters, well-established songwriters? Is it easier to like sort of let go and trust the other people who are giving suggestions as opposed to maybe Vince, when you bring things to your band or Chad and other projects, when you brought other projects to bear? Is it easier in this sort of setting because you all are so well established in your careers and there's not a ton of insecurity at all? It's just, you know, we're making art and we all have that experience already. So let's just do the best we can.
I think that's definitely a factor, and also the newness of it. It doesn't have these build up patterns, you know, of behavior to filter through. You know, it's fresh, and we're, you know, Sam and I've been doing for 34 years, you know, and you have kind of ingrained patterns of behavior that you build up over the years, and High Hawks are pretty fresh at it and navigating free of constraints.
Yeah, though there's an audience expectation too, maybe with some of the long-term established bands that some of us come from, you know, there's a certain sound or a certain sandbox that they're expecting. And with the High Hawks, it's, you know, the world is our oyster and it's a big old giant playground. We can come at it from a lot of different ways, which is really fun and liberating and in a lot of great ways.
I think that definitely comes through in the music you're making, because it's not, you know, if you were to take Railroad Earth, Hardworking Americans, Leftover Salmon, and Great American Taxi and sort of blend them all together, the natural thing would be the High Hawks. I mean, you are bringing all of those experiences lyrically and sonically, you're bringing all of those to bear to make this group, and you're not being precious about it. You know, Tim could be very precious about it as the guy who sings his songs or wants to produce his tracks, or you guys could do the same. But it seems like that cohesiveness really lends itself to making a great record.
I think we're all adults now, you know. Right.
So. Well.
Yeah,
I've seen your work, yeah. Vince. I'm not sure all of you are adults, but
that's a trap. Growing up is a trap. No one has grown up in this band. That's why we're all still doing this. But you know, I think you know, I mean, we'd be kidding everybody and ourselves if we didn't say there were a couple moments over that course of 8 or 9 days at Pachyderm where things did get a little testy or someone got a little uptight about something, but. Overall, it's just been a really, I would say from the point of present, you know, it's always an odd thing to bring a song into a group of people and kind of expose yourself, pull your pants down, you know, and yeah. I feel the safest I've ever felt and supported more than ever, in this group here of really ideas being received, songs being received in a really positive way. And like, yeah, we can do something with that. And then the caliber of players, boy, you, you unleash it in the room for a rehearsal to work it up, or in the studio to record it, and it's just like, wow, this is better than my wildest dream of what this song could sound like. You know, it's really magical and cool that way.
There are very few overdubs on the record, if I'm correct. Most of this is live off the floor. Is it a situation where you took the third take, the first take? Like how quickly did these songs come together individually? Like, was it fairly instant? Was it hours agonizing over a song? Like, when a song like Top Shelf Rock Bottom comes together, how long does a tune like that take to really see its way through for when you're comfortable putting that rendition on the record?
That one came together pretty quickly. You know, it's kind of, you know, a swing, you know, kind of Texas swing kind of thing, and you know, the song kind of guided us in it, and fairly obvious what kind of things should be done to it. Things like Diamond Sky or Mother Nature's Show or you know, Somewhere in the Middle, you know, was a little more complicated in the arrangements and who'd be doing what to move the song along, you know, and there are more things to discover in those moments that maybe a song like a Top Shelf kind of provides its own guidance, you know, where others are open to more investigations. Yeah.
Chad, Radio Loud has a very similar theme, you know, On Top of the World and End of the Line. It's sort of the same idea of Top Shelf Rock Bottom. Are these songs all, I don't want to, lyrically at least, they do hold a theme, I guess, of Americana and you know, blue collar or however you would term it. But is that the central theme to kind of this music? Like it's you know, every man's journey, every person's journey sort of. Is that sort of, am I on to something there with these songs?
Ira, you know, interestingly enough, what kind of has catapulted this thing to now being two records in, you know, at first it was like, okay, we've been threatening to be in a band together for a while because we want to make some time to hang out, and we've all had experiences playing music together and we love doing that. So finally in 2019, there was a little window we all discovered, just serendipitously, that okay, we've got this couple weekends in October and November, fall of 2019, let's book some shows. And then we all showed up at Vince's before the first shows in Boulder, and it turns out everybody had been kind of writing some songs with this project in mind that we had kind of loosely discussed, but thought, hey, you know, we could come up with a million different cover songs if we want for these shows, or we can dip into some back catalog stuff. But all of a sudden these songwriters, all of us showed up, and then we started playing these songs, and two things happened. One was all of a sudden a sound, you know, a certain sound started to develop. And that part of that was Vince and Adam playing electric guitars, Tim playing some electric guitar. And this kind of like Heartland rock sound is what I would describe it as, kind of started to present itself. And then as we were going through the songs, there was all these lyrical connections that were happening between the songs. We were like, holy shit, this is really cool. There's something's going on here. Well, we got to make a record. So we made the first record. And then as we started to work on the second record, and maybe a couple months before we were going to go into the studio, we all started to pass around some iPhone demos, you know, songs we had shouted into our phones. And again, the same thing happened as we were looking at all the pile of the songs. It was like, wow, there's all these threads. And I think that everyman ethos that you mentioned comes into play. I find in the High Hawks, oddly enough, that we have an animal as our mascot and our spirit animal. There's a lot of references to the planet, you know, that we all live and breathe on here. And there's threads of that tie through all the songs. So there is this very organic, and, you know, for lack of a better word, or not to get too heady, but cosmic, you know, there's a cosmic connection that's happening with this group. And I think that's why we're two records in now, and and trying to book some more shows and play some more music, because there's something really cool happening here that we probably can't all put our finger on, but it's happening and it's undeniable. So
is there a tone now? Obviously pop music does what pop music does, but is there a sense from you guys, you know, Chad, you're very active in the industry of music, and Vince, you're very active as a musician in the industry. Do you get the sense that this kind of music, Americana music, you know, whether it's the rise of, you know, Jamgrass or the rise of some of these contemporary country musicians who are throwbacks to yesteryear, or to even, you know, the jam band scene, is there sort of a renaissance of this kind of music happening now that's, you know, similar to maybe what was going on when some of this music first started in the 60s and 70s? Does that hold a candle to the thought out there? I mean, aside from pop music and pop and hip hop and all of that aside, is there enough? The audience is obviously big enough, but there seems to be a real revival in this kind of music. Vince, am I onto something?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like guys like Charlie Crockett, you know, arguably a retro kind of thing, but you know, moving it into the future is happening. You know, Billy Strings, what he's brought to bluegrass and that kind of stuff is opening up whole new audiences. You know, the music is cyclical, of course, and I think we are having a moment of real music happening in that the kind of a neo folk scare, you know, kind of going on sort of thing, you know, where it's a little more organic and a little more accessible, and the songs are things that, you know, your friend can learn to play on guitar and sing around a campfire kind of stuff. You know, I think the sum of that is definitely growing, and that's a good thing, certainly to our world.
Vince, what made you decide to bring Shine Your Blues to this project and not leave it for Leftover Salmon? Because to me, it could sound like, I mean, there's no reason why Leftover Salmon couldn't cover this song. It is a quintessential Louisiana Cajun Zydeco, New Orleans R&B, bluegrass, acoustic, every hodgepodge imaginable type of tune. It seems like a perfect Leftover Salmon song. How did the folks in High Hawks get their hands on it?
Well, actually, it was we've been doing it with the Vince Herman Band quite a bit, and you know, looking at tunes for the record, Will Trask said, "Well, you know, we could do that in a New Orleans kind of feel." That was a different kind of direction than we were taking it with the Vince Band, and I just loved that feel and that approach to it, and. Knew for sure that this band could do that song quite well, you know. So, songs float around trying to find a home, and it found a good one in this record.
I guess
there was actually an incident too. I believe we were doing a 2-night stand at some campground little mini festival in Central Illinois a couple years ago. And for us to play 2 nights back to back and mix the music and the song selection up enough, we had to learn some songs on day two ahead of the set that night. And Vince whipped this one out and we learned it and played it that night. And then it kind of just stuck too, you know, and had been a little bit in the live canon before that one, and Top Shelf were both in the live canon before we went into the studio. I think those were the only two though that we had attempted in any way ahead of time.
As you guys write more music, more material on your own, do you automatically know now what's a High Hawk song versus what's a Vince Herman solo record or a Leftover record? Or, you know, does somebody like Adam know what's a Hand Grenades tune? Like, is it something that you guys know now after two records in, spending time on the road, spending time in the studio? Is it easier to sort of pick those things out at this point?
Not for me. For me, you know, there's no telling where a song is going to live. You know, it all of these different ensembles could bring something totally different out of that song. And honestly, it's kind of random. Yeah, because you know songs have kind of a life of their own, and they can choose to live in whatever apartment they find. You know, that the songs are like a housing project, you know, that you live in for 2, 3, maybe even 4 minutes at a time, to quote John Hartford. And it's great when they find a home, and they can be totally different depending on where they're living.
I'm glad you mentioned John Hartford, because I think, you know, it's obvious, Vince, in the Leftover Salmon canon, and certainly in the live performance, there's a lot of John Hartford. But this music that you're making now, in many ways, lyrically at least, for me, harkens back to those John Hartford records. Like, there's a lot of that, not sarcasm, but sassiness, I would say. There's a lot of that sort of tone to these songs. I guess it's just that's what you guys all grew up listening to, right? I mean, that's why it's so apparent and inherent in the music that you make now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Hartford was a huge influence. And also in this band, the comedy is bubbling up just under the surface in just about everything we do.
I was going to say, I think, you know, I equate Hartford and some, you know, and some of the contemporary or maybe not so contemporary folk artists, you know, are right in line with Mark Twain, you know, and Mark Twain was constantly moving around this country and observing, you know, and as a traveling musician, you're seeing this country and maybe even the world real up close and getting real big bites and tastes of it. And I think that then in turn shows up in everyone's writing with kind of examining the human condition, maybe directly through your own thoughts and emotions and feelings, and then sometimes guided by experiences outside of yourself, you know, but that's a real gift, I think, to being a writer, is if you can travel and put yourself in situations where you're experiencing something different than your day-to-day existence, it can really spurn some good material to talk about or sing about.
It's no chance then that the record was recorded in Minnesota, sort of halfway in between both sides of the country, where, you know, there's a lot of traveling going on, whether it's Highway 61 or, you know, there's all of these, again, you know, signposts in the music that you're making to the stories of yesteryear, the stories of real people, the stories of how people are reacting to Mother Nature, all of these sorts of things all really do come through. Is this going to be an ongoing thing, you think, for you guys? I mean, the second record has been received really well. You're touring a little bit. Is this a side hustle, like a continuing side hustle for those that have it as a side hustle, and for those that, you know, have other day jobs? Is this part of life now? Is the High Hawks part of an ongoing resume and work for you guys?
I love making music with these guys. It's really freeing and inspiring, and you know, I don't see any reason to stop doing that. You know, as I get older, you know, touring so much, you know, I could maybe imagine slowing down a bit, but I don't want to quit anything. You know,
the beauty of High Hawks, Ira, is that there's no pressure. You know, we try as much as possible. You know, certainly, like, we just got an offer to play a really top shelf festival that most likely we're not going to be able to do. And that because of other of schedules and scheduling conflicts. And that's a bummer for sure. But overall, we're really trying to keep this thing as lighthearted in terms of the business aspect of it as we can. So it's always a fun place and a safe place and a cool place for people to come and hang out when we get the opportunities to do that, and try to keep the other stuff at bay in terms of expectations or bottom lines or number of dates per year, et cetera. It's none of that's informing us. So it's a good place to be with something you love to do.
And at the same time, we're really lucky to have Lo-Hi Records involved in this project, to be able to get these records out and do all that without, you know, going to, you know, a foreign record label. You know, we don't know the folks in, you know, it's our buddy Jim Brooks and Chad and Tim that are running the label, and that's just the best case scenario.
I forgot to ask this when we were talking about the record. It's self-produced. And to me, at least, it sounds production-wise way more mature than the first record. It seems like, I don't know, there's a definite sound. Obviously, the Hi-Hawks have a sound, but it seems way more wholesome on the second go-around. Is that something that you thought about? Is that something that, you know, just came naturally, you know, organically? It just seems like everybody's playing really well, but it also, there's a cohesiveness that, you know, exists in other places, but it's a more mature cohesiveness on this record. And I'm curious if you guys feel the same way about that.
I think the album definitely sonically, arrangement wise, part wise, it was all a step up from the last one. Like we talked about earlier, Ira, the first record, you know, it was, I think we had 4 or 5 days. We kind of just went in and approached it like we had been playing those songs live. Whereas if I think, you know, for one, we hadn't played most of these songs live, which I think a lot of times is a benefit, because people's first gut instinct and what they want to play usually is the right choice, you know? So there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit, maybe more simplistic approach to it, because you haven't had multiple shows to develop this part or this thing you're doing in it. So that allows maybe a little bit more space. You know, I think studio wise, some of the equipment and the way we were able to capture it was maybe a little bit of an upgrade. You know, and then honestly, we searched around for where to mix it. And Tim, a guy that Tim shares space with out in Pennsylvania, Don Sterniker is his name. And he's got some cool records to his credit, not like a big LA or New York name, but really talented guy who's been around for a long time. I felt like he did a really wonderful job, really presenting each voice, meaning instrumental voices and vocals, in a really big and up in your face way with a lot of clarity. And the record just sounds really big and full. And yeah, I hear it. I think we made a serious jump forward, you know, and I'd argue possibly the best I've ever been involved with in terms of production wise and what the end result was in overall sound and presentation.
That's not something a computer like AI could replicate. I know there's a throwaway line at the end of the press release here, but it's true. You know, it's all of these things that you guys bring to bear that probably AI couldn't understand, like your experiences together, your combined experience as musicians, years that you put in on the road, years that you put in playing, the work on lyrics. Like those are things that, you know, AI is obviously here, but it will never have the breadth of expertise and natural ability that you guys all bring to bear. Do you think about that at all? Or is that just, you know, stuff that other people are thinking about and you're just thinking about making your music?
You know, I would say, you know, that's interesting. I had to kill a 400 level elective credit to get my degree, finish my degree. And I took a 400 level artificial intelligence course. And this was like late 90s. And so obviously we've come a long, long way since then. But it was interesting. This professor was talking about how these people who were trying to develop artificial intelligence, how they go about it. And one of the ways was in which, like, we as a human being walk into a room, right? And how much information we are registering in nanoseconds, you know, everything you're seeing around you, everything you're hearing around you, and how would you start to replicate that? And you're right, when it comes down to emotion, you know, could AI ever learn that? You know, I don't know. It's hard to quantify that, or I think would be hard for artificial intelligence to identify where that comes from. The record was that studio Pachyderm. It's an analog studio up until the computer. So it was all outboard wired gear, you know, going in. And even sometimes they'll record onto tape up there. So all that stuff was captured. And, you know, I think like eventually AI could learn gain structure and whatnot, but what we were just talking about, you know, a record that sounds really big and full, et cetera, that, you know, that's gain structure. That's a lot of knowledge, collective knowledge that has gone into creating those signal paths properly to create the best possible sound and capture the best possible sound.
Thanks guys for taking the time. Thanks for making another amazing record. It's really, I'm really psyched at how good this, I've had a like a week and a half to listen to it, and it's gone through the speakers a few times. I'm really psyched at how good it sounds. So even if, you know, Vince, you decide to hang it up from being on the road, you got to keep making records, because if this is any idea of how good the records can be in the future, you got to keep doing it. Thanks so much for taking the time, guys. Always a real pleasure having you on and talking music with you, and good luck out there, and have fun touring this record.
Absolutely, man. We're heading to the toppermost of the poppermost, man.
Keep up the great work covering this music, Ira. You know, it's independent bands like us, independent record labels, independent artists, having places to talk about the art and let other people know about it. It helps our worlds go round. So thanks for what you're doing.
Always a treat talking with the legendary Vince Herrmann and the always awesome Chad Staley. For more on the Highhawks, visit thehighhawks.com and definitely check out their tunes wherever you listen to music. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track off of Mother Nature's show. Here is Top Shelf, Rock Bottom.
Down to New Orleans, but I landed in a limousine, hobo in a limousine, the luckiest hobo you'd ever see. Top shelf, rock bottom, top shelf, rock bottom, talk about your good times, Lord, I got a top shelf, rock bottom. Down on Bourbon Street, about the prettiest thing you'd ever want to meet. Her daddy came home and he grabbed me by the seat, threw me out the window, but I landed on my feet. Top shelf, rock bottom, top shelf, rock bottom, talk about your good times, Lord, I got a top shelf, rock bottom. Down to my luck. Well, I went all in and caught my bluff. I pulled an ace right out of my cup and said, hey there, boys, ain't this enough? Top shelf, rock bottom. Top shelf, rock bottom. Talk about your good times, Lord. I got a top shelf, rock bottom.
You've been listening to the Sound Podcast. technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.